This is KHNS, Haynes, Skagway, and Clukwan. You are listening to a special live broadcast of Lynn Canal Voice, offering highlights and insights into this past year's reporting work by our KHNS news team. As part of today's news drive, we're asking for your gift in support of the KHNS news program. You can donate right now by calling 907-766-2020 or 907-983-2853, or by visiting our website at khns.org. Now let's hear from former KHNS reporters Henry Leisha and Claire Stremple, who guided our news program through the early part of the pandemic and earned national and statewide recognition for their coverage of the December 2020 storm and aftermath. Here they share with Corinne Smith about what it was like to cover the storm disaster.
That day started super early. Zach was holding it down for the morning news, and we were getting a lot of Nixle alerts like really early that morning and even the night before about roads washing out. So I remember kind of getting up early and being like, okay, this is going to be our story for the day, a big storm. And I tried to drive into town like around 6:30 or something. And there was a tree in the road. So like, okay, well, we were set up to work remotely because of COVID. So it's like, all right, well, I guess we'll just be making some phone calls today. Yeah, that's kind of how it started. And then it just kind of kept growing and growing and growing. Started seeing things on social media, like, somebody's house had been tipped over by a mudslide. That was kind of the first, like, big. So we were kind of scrambling. I guess, like, Claire was kind of like mission control. That's kind of how I imagine it.
It's kind of how it was. Henry got into town after the tree got cleared from the road and started talking to people. And as he was talking to people, you know, first he got into town and like downtown was flooded. And so he's sending me these pictures and this audio that's just kind of starting to sound pretty incredible. And then as that was happening and as social media was starting to reflect what was like rapidly turning into a disaster in Haynes, we started getting calls out from across the state, essentially in Anchorage and Juneau, asking if we needed help. And that's, I think, when Henry and I realized that we were basically, the news was happening so fast that we were just chasing a story that was not only really fast becoming, you know, a disaster story, but that we were just going to be running for a long time. And I think that Henry at one point was like, I feel like I'm chasing someone who's faster than me. And that was kind of the feeling for at least a week. But we were reporting that story for much longer. So reporters from Anchorage were helping us out by making calls. Henry was downtown on the scene, kind of all over the place. And I don't know how he was getting around because so many roads were flooded and like washed out, that somehow he was kind of managing to navigate this and sending audio to me. And then I was compiling that into a story and piecing together a narrative. I was making calls to the borough, the fire department, anyone I could essentially get my hands on, people who were out the road and stuck because of landslides out the road and on Lutac. So I was just kind of trying to pull information from all those sources that was then coming from Anchorage and Juneau, people who were making calls, and Henry, who was talking to people on the ground. And then that afternoon is when the really big slide came down on Beach Road. And
And so
everything really changed.
One thing I want to kind of highlight is, Claire and I were focusing on putting together a news story and getting out, you know, the most up-to-date information. But meanwhile, at the station, like volunteers were, you know, sending out evacuation orders and updating locals in real time. And I'm really thankful for that and was just amazed at how professional all of our volunteer DJs were at that time. Multiple times there were DJs on the air who had to give evacuation orders for their own neighborhoods. And, but they did it, you know, they knew it was important. And yeah, that was really incredible. And that allowed us to, you know, focus on trying to get kind of more detailed information to put together for a news story. We could go out and be out on the scene, and Claire could, you know, be coordinating with the other editors and making sure that we had the most accurate information, you know, for a news story. So there were a lot of moving parts and, you know, definitely weren't prepared for it. But at the same time, I'm really glad it happened after we had been there for, you know, about 2 years or something. It, you know, if we had been fresh reporters, it would have been a lot harder. We wouldn't have known who to call and where to go.
Yeah, I mean, your instincts and your, you know, teamwork and your efforts were extremely effective, and you were able to get out a story for that state newscast that night, which then won the Murrow Award. Can you talk about looking back at that and looking back at your reporting and then being recognized for that? How did that feel?
It's nice to get recognized. I mean, the award, so like some of the awards that we got, there was kind of a focus on like the collaborative effort, which I think was the biggest strength there. You know, when Claire and I were pretty frazzled, and I mean, you know, this was affecting us personally, we could kind of rely on people who had kind of an outside perspective to make sure that we had a polished, accurate piece. And, you know, when we were kind of brain dead and trying to write something, they could help get the language right. And so that, yeah, I'm really thankful for that statewide network that was there for us.
Yeah, I think a huge part of what made all that possible was that we essentially had backup and support. It was pretty incredible. That, and, you know, everyone was so, when everyone had no time, when everyone was kind of pushed to their limit, everyone still made time for us as well. Like when we would call the fire department, you know, Doug Olrud and Aleka Fullerton were giving us updates every hour for that first couple of days. Like what that took, what they were going through, but the information needed to get out. And even when people's power was out, their radios could still be on. And that's really was important. And it was, you know, volunteers and our program manager, it was Marley and Don and Kay who got that stuff on the air while we were just kind of feeding that information out. So it was pretty huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's an incredible kind of show how community radio can really serve in a time of crisis.
Yeah, and I kind of want to highlight, like, yeah, we did all this reporting and there's awards and stuff, but like it was the local side of it and the local communication. I think, again, that was what struck me the most. I remember when I finally got to go home at one point, you know, turning on the radio and just hearing our local DJs still giving updates, still playing great music. and it was just so nice because I felt like, you know, I was alone at home and totally fried and totally stressed out and really sad about this tragedy. But there was somebody there in my living room with me, comforting me, playing good music, you know, giving me updates on the weather and what to expect, because, you know, everybody, you know, went on for a week of rain. And so just kind of staying up to date on the weather and having somebody there for you was really powerful. So yeah, shouts out. I can't stress enough how thankful I was for all of our volunteer DJs at that time.
I had a kind of similar memory where that first night after we got the news out, there was this like brief moment where we could like think. and I remember doing the same thing and my radio was on and I was packing a go bag because I realized as more evacuation notices came in that might be a necessary thing. And so I was there like packing this little bag of clothes that was next to my reporting kit. And it felt pretty surreal, but I had, you know, a friendly voice on the radio that and like local programming, and it was just nice.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it was kind of the defining event of going into 2021. And I imagine very difficult also to balance that kind of storm response coverage with like everything else going on in the towns, or also in Skagway too. You know, school continues, government affairs continue, life continues. So what was that like?
I think our Skagway reporting took a hit for a week or two.
Yeah.
Our apologies to Skagway. We were pretty focused on Haines. I think a lot of things though did feel like they kind of stood still at that moment. You know, we weren't having meetings in Haines that week. I mean, there were a lot of meetings in Haines that week, but they weren't the regularly scheduled meetings. So the whole focus was really on the emergency and on the recovery for quite some time, I'd say.
Yeah. So much of that year was reporting on COVID, and thankfully there wasn't an outbreak you know, during that, the response to that disaster, we had 100 or so people come into town to help out, lots of volunteers. Everybody was gathering at the fire hall, you know, on a daily basis, packed in there real tight. And I was thankful for that, because that would have been something else to report on, and just would have been a whole lot. Then I remember, you know, shortly after the disaster in January, we started getting the vaccines, and that was a nice kind of hopeful story to report on after, you know, having such a rough December.
Yeah, and I'm curious, like, you know, in addition to the storm, what are some of, like, your proudest or most interesting or satisfying stories or issues you covered last spring?
But we did a heck of a lot of bear reporting. Those were just so, they're not the most uplifting stories or anything, but it is super interesting, just kind of the cross-section between wildlife reporting and life in Alaska reporting, and just kind of how people deal with bears around them, you know? So those stories were super interesting. And I guess I'm more proud of the stories where they're a little more fun and you get to play with sound a little more. And Claire's reported on the buckwheat before. The buckwheat stories are always really fun to put together, because there's just like great opportunity to get some good sound and some good interviews. And it's, you know, it's the kind of a local favorite event in Skagway. It's kind of one of the bigger events of the year. So I love those stories. And
yeah, and we did so much reporting that it's kind of wild to think. To think back, I really loved. Do you remember that story that you did when you went and toured the sewage plant? I loved that story. It was like this sound of dripping. That was through the whole story, but it was just, I don't know why I liked that story so much. But yeah, the bear reporting was great. But one story that definitely sticks out for me is Henry went out Lutac in the early days of the disaster. I think it was maybe the second or third day, or maybe it was the third or fourth day, into, you know, one of the more dangerous zones, just because that area out Lutac was so unstable and it was still raining, and just got this incredible story from the people who were working to clear that road so that, you know, the fuel dock and the passenger ferry, so that the road was clear and Haines wasn't as cut off, which you were just in the car with them. And you could kind of like hear the rain coming down, and you could hear just kind of the urgency of where these reporters are like jammed in the car with the first response, essentially, talking to people who had been hit at the very beginning of the storm. And it was just excellent reporting. It was excellent writing. And every part of that story really sang. And it brought the rest of the community into a place that wasn't accessible. That was really incredible.
That was former KHNS reporter Claire Strempel and Henry Leija and myself, Corinne Smith, looking back at the news team this year and the incredible reporting around the storm disaster last December. So many moments, so much information shared. It's really an incredible feat that they accomplished, and it was such a treat to look back with them and kind of reflect on that time.
Yeah, and once again, you're tuned in to a special edition of Lynn Canal Voice in honor of the all-day live culmination of the KHNS News Drive this year. You can still make your gift in support of our news program online at khns.org or by calling 766-2020 or 983-2853 during normal business hours. And we are currently running a challenge grant from the First National Bank for $350. We haven't reached that yet, so any donation you make until we reach that is doubled, which is great. So call in now or go to the website at khns.org and make your pledge in support of local news. Yeah. So coming up next, we will be hearing from the Skagway end of things, from Mike Swayze. He did a great little round table that we'll be cutting to in just a minute.
Joined right now by Melinda Munson from the Skagway News and Jeff Brady formerly from the Skagway News. Thanks a lot for joining me in my living room studio.
You're welcome.
Hi. Good to see you.
We are going to play some clips and then just talk about the stories. And so I guess let's get started. Border restrictions remain in place to prevent all but essential travel between Lynn Canal communities and Canada. But the possibility of outbreaks in the region looms large as Skagway prepares to receive its first large cruise ships since 2019 next month. In addition to the outbreak affecting our neighbors to the north, the Royal Caribbean cruise ship Odyssey of the Seas this week has postponed its next sailing out of Florida due to COVID-19 cases. Who wants to tackle this one first?
Oh, she's looking at me.
I'm looking at Jeff.
It's been a strange year, but better than last year. At least we are progressing towards some kind of normalcy, if we ever get back to it. What we've learned about COVID, especially this year, is that it has variations to it, and that while vaccines are really the best way to remain healthy, it hasn't always convinced a lot of people to get a vaccine. But we've also learned that COVID can hit the vaccinated as well. So you're just reacting every time something happens, whether it's in the Yukon or whether it's all, you know, Alaska. I mean, I was with the Northwards board and we had to postpone initially our May conference. We thought we'd be able to happen. There was no way it could happen. And then we were limited by half of what we could allow, you know, up till July. And then July came around and, oh yeah, you could have one Labor Day weekend. So we planned for one for Labor Day weekend, and then Delta hits and bam, nobody wants to come because Delta's all over Alaska. So we had to cancel eventually. And COVID is a planning nightmare because you really can't nail down anything. It's difficult.
And it doesn't end because everybody's still struggling to figure out what to do next season. We have to make plans for next season, but how do you make a plan when you don't have the information in front of you? And you won't have the information in front of you. So it just continues to change everything all the time. And then you have to make plans based on empty air. And that's hard for businesses.
Yeah. But I think the community's safer now. I mean, than it was a year ago for sure. So that's a bright spot, but it's still hard to plan anything. And, you know, just keeping our fingers crossed that we have a somewhat normal tourist season. And the one thing about COVID is that even when we had the cruise ships, they didn't really bring it to us. COVID was coming in by other means.
Yeah, the mayor of Skagway has famously said repeatedly the cruise ships are the safest place on earth right now.
And that was amazing. And I think it wasn't what we expected. We expected when the first ship came, there were going to be cases transmitted from the ship. But as far as we know, there were not any ship to community member.
Right. Most of those cases that came in have been travel related and not related to cruise ships. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they ended up being really safe. And then if they did have outbreaks, they contained them really well. I think the big thing to wonder about for next summer is, will the Canadian border ease restrictions so that travelers that come in on cruise ships are able to go up to Carcross and, you know, the Klondike Highway to alleviate some of the bottleneck in Skagway? Because without that, I think we're in big trouble.
The border restrictions are going to have a huge impact on if businesses make it next summer.
Yeah, the whole testing requirement that we have to go through now, if that remains, that's going to just be, that's going to be a terrible hit. And I'm sure Carcross will not see any visitors from here if there's going to be a testing requirement.
All right, I think we're going to move on to the next clip. Ore concentrates originally arrived by rail and later by truck, coming into Skagway from mines in Canada's Yukon Territory. The ore gets dumped onto a conveyor belt and loaded onto barges. In the early days, dust from those heavy metals often ended up on the roadways and in the harbor. State Department of Environmental Conservation officials in 1990 stated that the contamination of the Skagway Harbor was a pressing issue. There's been little progress since. White Pass has repeatedly said that, well, we're waiting for permission from the Assembly, and the Assembly's like, we gave you permission, do it. Well, Linda, what are your thoughts on remediation, and will they clean up the harbor ever?
I wish I had a crystal ball. So I've been here almost 2 years, and in the almost 2 years that I've been here, nothing's happening. Nobody's cleaning up that area. There's been zero, I don't want to say effort. There's been talks, but that's all it's been is talks. And I suspect that when Jeff talks, he's going to say that it's the same thing since he's been here. How many years, Jeff?
Well, I've been here 40, but this goes back 15 years at least.
Yeah.
But
30 years ago, the DEC told White Pass that they had to clean up the harbor. Now, back then, they also were just, you know, they had open truck beds. And so ore dust was just kind of flowing off of the truck beds onto the streets. So they went and cleaned that up. But they, and you know, in the meantime, they're out there just sweep, at the end of the day, they're sweeping the docks off into the ocean. And it's all this lead and zinc dust that just into the ocean. And so y'all familiar with kind of what their argument is?
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up was the one thing that has changed this season is the Ordinance 21-07, where Skagway set limits for soil sediment contamination. And as far as we know, we're the first city in Alaska to do so. And so these requirements or maximums have been based on Washington state laws. And the reason why they were based on Washington state laws is because there are no Alaska laws. So there's nothing to base it on. So Skagway went forward and made their own laws for soil sediments. And so now they're expecting White Pass to uphold those maximums. And so it's going to be interesting to see how White Pass reacts to that. They already were obviously not fans of that ordinance, but now that there's a standard moving forward, we'll see how does it help? Does it hold one company more accountable? We'll see.
What does the lease agreement do? You know, as the lease is expiring next year, or sorry, in 23, we're not quite to 22 yet. We're pretty close. As that lease expires, does that hold White Pass less accountable?
No, no. I mean, they are still accountable for the sins of the past, and they have owned up to most of it because they were operating the facility when the worst of this was going on. By the time 86 rolled around, when the EPA came in and shut everything down, Kuro was operating, and I forget who the trucking company was. So they were kind of at the end of it. But all of those companies together were responsible for the initial cleanup, where they cleaned up along State Street, up the railroad line. They had these super scoopers down on the beach, but they never got to the basin because the basin is still a conversation, and it's got to move beyond the conversation phase to the action phase. And White Pass will always be responsible for a good part of that because they were operating the facility at the time. I think it's in the best interest of everyone that it be done before the lease expires. I think that would just make it cleaner for everybody. The worst thing that could happen, and I actually fear this will probably happen because of the way things are going, is that it'll end up in court, and nobody wins when it goes to court.
All right, we're going to move on to our last clip. The good news for the Miles family is that they just had a beautiful baby. The not so good news is they are stuck in Juneau.
We were planning on finally heading home to get settled in here this week, and now we get to stay an extra week. You know, we could fly, but, you know, with having baby and our car down here and all of the things that go along with baby, it's kind of hard to just hop on a plane and go.
So, you know, look, it just keeps happening time after time. The ferry, our ferry system doesn't have a backup.
What I hear from people is that they feel like we don't count, that nobody's really looking out for us outside of Skagway. It's kind of like living in a third world country where your road breaks down and it's impassable and you have no way out and there's not a response. We had an inkling of the ferry situation before we moved here, but had I known how really bad it was, maybe we wouldn't have moved here. And we do hear stories of families, at least four right now, that are considering moving out of Skagway primarily because the ferry system is so unreliable.
Jeff, how has it looked throughout the years? I mean, at one point, the Alaska Marine Highway System was the crown jewel of ferry service in America, or so it seems. But over the last few years, just straight downhill.
Due to the state budget crunch and oil revenues declining, we knew they were going to have to trim it back. And that happened during the Parnell and Walker administrations to a point. But it was okay. They were still running the system the best they could. I feel like since Dunleavy came in office and just did drastic cuts, that he's left the system operators no viable options other than to lay up ships. And that is unconscionable, I think, to the people who live here and rely on the boats. I mean, you played that story, and when I first looked at it, I was like, okay, when was this? I said, this could have been any month in the past year. Once they finally got the Matanuska up and running properly, it ran great all summer. But here we are in the winter. They stuck it in for its annual, and now we're looking at a month-long delay before it comes out, and they won't commit to it coming out still. They've added the Leconte for an extra week in January. That's going to help. But what about the rest of the month if the mat, you know, I'm supposed to go out on the mat at one point.
Me too.
And I mean, everybody's in a situation where you plan your travel or your medical situations or whatever, shopping trip. You plan it around the ferry because it used to be the reliable backup, especially in winter when planes are more of an iffy proposition. So it's very, very frustrating.
Melinda, I'm going to go to you for last word because we're running out of time.
We have cancer patients who need to get to Juneau to have mammograms. I mean, this is serious life-threatening issues that people are dealing with. And it's just unconscionable.
And there's two brand new Alaska class ferries sitting down there doing nothing.
Thank you very much, Melinda Munson and Jeff Brady. I appreciate you guys joining me in the living room today for the live broadcast, the recorded live broadcast.
Sorry, I had to get that in.
Oh, man. We didn't even get to talk about the cabin.
All right, that was Melinda Munson and Jeff Brady talking with Mike Swayze over in Skagway.
That was really fun. And that is, along with Corinne's stories and speaking with Henry Leisha and Claire Strumple, just a taste of what has been going on this year and been covered by KHNS News Team. And this is a good time. Today is our live drive. We'd love for you to call in and say, hey, thanks, News Team. You guys are great. The numbers are 983-2853-766-2020. I hear a lot of appreciation for the both of our news reporters and the way they both dig into the stories and bring us what is going on in the Upper Lynn Canal. And this is just a good time to honor them with a donation if you can do that. We have $350 left to make our match for the First National Bank of Alaska. They donated $1,000 as a challenge grant, which means we're going to double that. We're just very close. We need $350 to make that match complete. We've raised over $8,800, and just a couple more people I wanted to thank. Annie Boyce and Paul Swift, the Chilkat Valley News, Carol Tyneman, Ann Myron and Tim McDonough, and Matthew Craig and Terry Mulligan, and the Lynn Canal Corporation. Thanks, Deborah, Claire Fortis and Clay Good and Margaret Friedenauer and John Hagen. Just a few of the many folks who've called in and given their own comments, too. We've heard some of them, but Jennifer Talley, fabulous sound and currents, great voices, awesome reporting, and good-looking DJs. We like that last part. And Samantha Darling from White House said, KHNS was always a fundamental piece of the drives to town throughout my childhood for the local news, not to mention the DJs with excellent music taste. And Marcia from Skagway, KHNS has kept me informed locally and globally since its inception. Thank
you. We've also got some testimonials from a few people. Here's one from Tom Morfitt.
This is Tom Morfitt. I've worked in Haines as a news reporter, newspaper publisher, and Haynesboro Assembly member. Impartial reporting of public affairs is critical to our collective decision-making and to the success of our towns. For 41 years, KHNS has been faithfully reporting the news of Haines, Skagway, and Clutquam. You can help keep the news alive today by making a contribution to the annual news drive. Your donation helps our communities thrive. Make your gift at khns.org today. Thank you.
And also doubles that money, that last $350, to make $1,000, which really makes us $2,000. We've had a lot of calls for that match, and we'd love to add you into that group. You can do that now by calling 983-2853-766-2020 or go online, as Tom mentioned, khns.org. We also have our fabulous morning host, of which Jasper is one.
I am.
And what's it like to get up that early in such icy weather?
Oh, it's dark. Oh, it's dark. It's cold. That's a good start to the day. It, you know, gets me up early, keeps me in sort of a routine.
Out the door.
Yeah, out the door. There are upsides.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Those are them?
Yeah.
Carry on.
Yeah, you know, Lincoln Now Morning is definitely a big part of what the news drive helps to maintain.
It is.
And I, you know, a lot of people really appreciate getting up that, you know, early in the morning and hearing the news first thing is
the early birds.
The early birds.
They count on it.
Yeah. Big also, shout out to the early birds.
Yeah. Also, Amelia Nash and JoJo joined Jasper. They all make it happen each week.
Mm-hmm. The dream team.
The dream team. Exactly.
Yeah. And of course, helping maintain KHNS news programming includes Lynn Canal Voice.
It does.
Which we're listening to. Yeah, you are currently tuned in to a special edition of Lincoln Now Voice. We're doing a retrospective that our news team has put together over the highlights of the past year. And up next, we have highlights of some of the top Haines and Clukwan news stories brought to you by our Haines reporter, Corinne Smith.
Haines began 2021 taking the first steps on the long road to recovery from the devastation of last December's storms. The community mourned and began to take stock of storm damage and work to repair roads, homes, and livelihoods. The Haines Long-Term Recovery Group formed to facilitate assistance and support families with immediate needs, as well as chart the long path ahead. The Haines School came back after winter break, mourning the tragic loss of kindergarten teacher Janae Larson in the landslide, and some students were displaced from homes during the storms. Everyone was impacted. Haines art teacher Giselle Miller created a paper crane project to foster healing.
And we're folding paper cranes and going to be hanging them for Janae outside the kindergarten room and inside, and kind of for the kindergartners as well. But it's not only to kind of honor her in that way, in that space, but also to like bring some beauty and some light to that space for the kindergartners. Does that make sense?
Paper cranes are a Japanese tradition. It signifies protection and healing. Students as young as 5 and up to their late teens are helping.
Okay.
The community can pitch in too.
Grief, anger, sadness, confusion, like all those things. I want the art room to be a safe space where students can feel like they can express those things and bring those things up and then go from there.
A ray of hope and relief came in mid-January when the Regional Health Consortium began offering the first COVID vaccines for adults in Haines and Clukwan, thanks to Indian Health Services. In 2 days, the Haines Clinic administered 600 shots, about 40% of the Chilkat Valley.
It's adrenaline. We're so excited.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely excited.
And then nurses whisked people into rooms for a briefing and a quick shot. Some wore glitter makeup. COVID varies, they said.
Okay, go ahead and relax your arm. Okay, you can feel a little poke. 1, 2, 3. You're done.
In February, a Chilkat Valley bear encounter made international news with headlines like Haines woman survives outhouse bear. Shannon Stevens spent the weekend out with her brother and his girlfriend at a remote yurt on Chilkat Lake and went to use the outhouse.
Normally when we're out there in the summer or the fall or something, I'm used to shouting, "Hey, bear," the whole way. And it was dead of winter. I didn't think to do that this time. So I got in there and sat down on the toilet seat and something just immediately bit me in the butt. So I jumped up and screamed.
She called for her brother, Eric Stevens, who came running to investigate.
I'm like, okay, I'm going to open the lid and look. And I take the headlamp and I grab the lid of the toilet seat and I lift it up. And right there, right at the level of the toilet seat, like maybe an inch or two below, is a gigantic bear face looking right back up at me.
Luckily, she was not seriously injured and had a good sense of humor, even adopting the name DJ Bear Bite when DJing on KHNS. In May, longtime Haynes author, columnist, and obituary writer for the Chilkat Valley News, Heather Lendy, was named Alaska Writer Laureate.
I ride around the edges of a busy life. And I always have. Part of the reason I think I was nominated is because I've just been writing a long time, columns and essays and stories and books, of course. And basically, I say yes when anybody asks me to write something is sort of how it began. My process usually is most productive when I have a deadline. So I'm kind of a... Deadlines are great inspiration for me.
The first cruise ship arrived in Haines in June, the first in almost 2 years, says Haines tourism director Stephen Ock.
Well, 622 days to be exact since the last cruise ship here, September 29th of 2019.
A groundbreaking ceremony was held in Tlingit Park to celebrate the construction of a new Tlingit Longhouse Pavilion.
We're making Tlingit Park more Tlingit. And it's been on a lot of our hearts and minds for many, many years that we need to have a traditional gathering place and a longhouse.
That was Jan Hill, former mayor of Haines, and on the organizing committee for the project funded by the National Park Service. In July, the Chilkat Valley community celebrated the return of the Southeast Alaska State Fair with 4 days of music, games, local wares, and many beloved traditions. Sisters Juniper and Willow All, aged 9 and 6, are getting ready to ascend.
I'm going to be climbing the rock wall, and I hope I can ring the bell because last time I wasn't able to because I was like 3.
Their mom is Deborah All, bassist and vocalist in the California-based rock group The Lack Family. The three sisters and their parents tour around the world and come back to Haines to play the fair every year. I catch up with Deborah at the Lack Family booth as the Fish Pickers play the main stage.
A treat. It's such a treat. Like, I feel we're back with friends and family and like a big reunion. So I'm very thankful. I'm so thankful.
In August, the community saw its largest COVID outbreak to date. Cases peaked at over 60, with likely more among community members and visitors from around the region. It prompted widespread testing, masking, and long weeks of canceled activities and hunkering down amid recovery. Haines Schools persevered, continuing in person throughout the 2020-21 school year and organized to do the same entering the fall term, with masking and testing protocols in place. Out front, third grader Melody Peters says she's excited, but also had some last-minute nerves about the first day. Her mom, Brandy Peters, gives her some encouraging words as she follows her older brother, Jerry, through the front doors.
Third grader and a sophomore. I don't know what's happening.
Peter says she and her family feel safe being in person thanks to school staff.
I think we're a little bit more prepared for the masks and COVID stuff and everything, so a lot of us parents feel a bit more secure with them coming to school and not being as worried, so that definitely helps having our staff be just so amazing. There'd be no way we'd be able to be open year-round without the Haines school staff.
The Haines Borough hired Annette Kreitzer as borough manager after an 18-month search. The community saw significantly less bear encounters than last year, where a record 30 bears were killed outside the hunting season. Wildlife biologists say that was thanks to more natural food sources and also in large part to community measures to secure attractants, like garbage and setting up electric fences. The Haines cross country team swept the state championship and was welcomed home by a parade. The high school art class unveiled a mural project at the skate park. Haines senior Aubrey Cook shared what it was like to display her work in public.
I think it is so cool. I have never done any type of piece like this, especially this big. I've never done a piece this big. And If you had came in here before, it was kind of just like a bunch of graffiti everywhere with like inappropriate things, but now it's like a really beautiful space, and we all learned that it's a living, breathing space, which means like eventually this is going to get covered up by other people's artwork, but we're really thankful for that we had this opportunity to paint.
Klukwan was faced with the possibility of the Chatham School District closing its school, as enrollment dropped below 10, the minimum to receive state funding. The community urged the district to address the underlying issues of low enrollment and keep the school open. Here's Klukwan resident Catherine Hotch.
The kids are the most important thing here. I grew up with grandparents that told us, it's for the kids, it's for the kids. And I grew up hearing that.
Parent Nicholas Chikoski was one of many who said Klukwan offers an incredible learning opportunity.
My son is learning to speak Tlingit language. He's learning traditional Tlingit art, form line, and other things like that. He gets amazing attention because of the small school size. He has interaction with multiple age kids that you don't have in a conventional school where everybody's segregated by age.
Negotiations between Klukwan and the Chatham School District are ongoing. The U.S. border opened to non-essential travel for Canadians for the first time since the pandemic.
It's a dodge! That's it! No, it's not. Ready? Black dodge! Is it Yukon plates?
The Haines Community Marching Band was at the ready to play O Canada, welcoming the first car pulling into the visitor center in downtown Haines. There was just one car before noon. Bruce Funk of White Horse had a police escort from the border crossing about 40 miles north of Haines. Funk had tears in his eyes as he shook hands with Haines Mayor Douglas Olrude.
Welcome back to Haines. We've missed everybody in the Yukon, and being able to have you guys back here means a lot.
Haines was awarded a $20 million federal infrastructure grant to renovate Lutac Dock, capping years of ongoing discussion and concern around the community's aging freight and fuel dock. The year closed out with a community memorial and dedication event marking 1 year since the December storms, with a focus on trauma and community healing. Just walking each other home. 2021 was a tough year. Feeling the continuous pressure of the COVID pandemic, the aftermath of the devastating winter storms, and economic pressures. But residents have come together, united against challenges and celebrating wins, and always the immense beauty of the Chilkat Valley. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
All right, that was, as mentioned, Corinne Smith with a retrospective on some of
that was wonderful,
some of the highlights of the news the last year.
Yes, just some highlights. I mean, there was a lot going on and continues to be so much going on. And we're grateful to have Corinne in Haines and covering these wonderful stories before, after, and going forward. So if you also appreciate the caliber of our news, this is a day to make a donation, and we have a match going right now. We need $250 to make our $1,000 match, and that is doable. That's two sustaining memberships or, you know, however you want to do that, a bunch of $50 memberships. Those are all great. The numbers, 983-2853. 766-2020. You can also go online, khns.org. Want to thank Julie Korsmeyer and Bill Urowitz, Josie Allen, Josie's Bread, Connie Staska, Betsy Lyons, Sully Clements, and Judy Erickson, just in the last couple of hours, who've called in to be part of that match. And that's an important way to increase our funding. The First National Bank of Alaska has been very generous in all their Southeast Alaska branches, and we're fortunate to be able to bring this and offer it to you. If we make that match of $250, it's another $1,250 on the board. That brings us over $10,000, which is halfway through our goal for today, our live drive of news. And in the driver's seat, we have Jasper, who is part of the Lynn Canal Morning Crew.
Yep.
Talk about that crew. Who are
they? About that crew? That would be me, Amelia Nash, and JoJo Gerner. We are the ones who...
get up early?
Wake up at 5 a.m. and bring you the first look at the news in the morning. We read through the news stories from the previous day. We update the weather first thing in the morning. We're the first boots on the ground here in the morning.
Amen to that. Yeah. And, rather you than me.
Yeah. And we update all the weather and everything that everybody reads throughout the day. So it's sort of just we prime the pumps, as
yeah,
it were.
As it were. That's really great.
Yeah. And Lincoln L Morning is Lincoln L Morning, Lincoln L Voice, all our newscasts, our evening newscasts, they are all part of what you are supporting when you donate.
So true.
Yeah. So if you like the morning news, if you tune into Lincoln L Morning every day, as I know some people do, please consider donating. The phone numbers once again are 766-2020 or 983-2853. And I believe we just got a new donation.
We did. I want to thank Beth McCready. Many thanks, Beth, for calling in and being a part of that match. We're closing in on the $1,000 and just need a couple more phone calls. 983-2853, 766-2020. We'll be doubling. We're at, $9,130 right now. And so give us a call. Help us complete that match. And also, when you call during these times, it also says a big thank you to the folks who are hosting. It's a great, of course, thank you in general to the news that KHNS is able to provide via our talented staff. But also it keeps the nuts and bolts running that the station can be here to bring you the news. That's also an important component because you can't have one without the other. So please do consider supporting the station today, supporting our news team. It's a news drive. We have some lovely thank you gifts for you.
Yes.
But and the real satisfaction comes from knowing that you're helping support our team. And yeah. So,
and speaking of that team,
yes,
over in Skagway, Mike Swayze.
Mike Swayze, we're moving on.
Once again, we are listening to a special edition of Lincoln L Voice. We're doing a retrospective on some of the highlights of the news team's efforts the last year. And rounding it off here, Mike Swayze has a little wrap-up on some of the more lighthearted stories from over in Skagway. So,
and probably a little wrap, too.
Yeah. We'll turn it over to him.
I'm joined by Dustin Stone and Cooper Lynn Hayes, both, you know, pretty involved theatrical people in Skagway. I think it's a big deal that you guys join me in my living room. I really appreciate this.
Is that your nice way of calling me a drama queen, Swayze?
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured.
You're so nice at it, though. You're so good at it. I mean, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to play some clips, and then we're just going to talk about the stories. Does that sound all right?
Sounds great.
Are you
yes.
good?
Okay. I'm in.
I was promised a round table, and this table is clearly hexagonal.
Here comes the first clip. Charity Pomeroy and Meredith Schmidt inked a deal in December of 2019 to purchase the musical production that tells the story of famed con man Soapy Smith, from his reign as the biggest gangster in Skagway to his death during a shootout with vigilante Frank Reed. Little did they know, just a few short months later, the show would not go on.
Hold it! Hold it! Stop! 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 Wait! Hold everything! There's one more item on the agenda before we start the show.
I'm just so happy that you got a clip where there are actually people in the audience laughing instead of just falling asleep and eating popcorn and slowly rotting. That's
great. I was one of those people that was in the audience that night. Swayze, that was the town show that you all recorded, yeah?
That's exactly
right.
Oh,
that makes sense. Yeah, Skagway is definitely the best audience.
No, it was the last show. It was the 33rd show of the 98th year of the Days of 98 show, and Dustin Stone was playing Soapy Smith.
Yes, I was. I got shot.
The most notorious gangster in Skagway. That also, that 33rd show of the, 98th year?
98th season, yeah.
Yes, that was the very first theatrical production that I'd seen since I'd heard about this little thing called COVID-19. And that was a very special day for me personally because I got to come and watch the show. That was amazing. And I definitely teared up being in a theater for the first time in a really long time, eating popcorn and watching brilliant local talent.
It was really really exciting for all of us too, especially I'd say Meredith and Charity, you know, getting to do the show after immediately having to go on hiatus after buying it. It was so cool to get to work with these people that just live and breathe and eat and drink theater, and to get to do something with them to like start bringing a little bit of theater back to the North. So this long running show, and then to have this, you know, forced hiatus, and then to be able to come out and entertain people again, it was pretty exciting.
And it was your first time ever being Soapy Smith, right?
As far as I know, I'd never been Soapy Smith before. Man, it was absolutely surreal to go from the events of 2020 and being self-isolated to all of a sudden I'm dressed up like an old-timey like cowboy and pretending
villain, not just a cowboy, but
a straight villain. Let's go anti-hero.
Okay.
But yeah, to be, you know, wearing a cowboy hat and three-piece suit and talking old-timey language at an audience of people again was a trip.
Are you one of the people who thinks that Soapy wasn't killed by Frank Reed, but was shot by Jesse Murphy, and it was a setup, it was a murder, other than it wasn't just a shootout, it was more of a murder, a hit job?
I don't think I ever got that deep into it, unfortunately.
Murder.
What I think is fascinating about that show are two things. One, that Charity and
Meredith
they didn't intend to act in their show.
Oh, no. Yeah, they did everything this season. That's what's crazy. Charity and Meredith set up the show, did all the hiring, did the books, did the payroll, made the popcorn before every single show, cleaned the theater, dealt with my super needy, insecure actor self, and acted in the show every single day. And that's just insane.
Just acted, but can danced. Girls were killing and canning and singing in falsetto. Brilliant.
Carried
brilliant
the
artists.
Show so I could chew the scenery.
Were brilliant.
The second thing that I think is so amazing about that show is that it's been running for 98 years. And I called Guinness Book of World Records to say, hey, is there anything that's been running longer? They couldn't point anything out. Now, it's not an official Guinness Book of World Records record. But they couldn't say that there was anything over 40 years.
Let's put
sounds
that
like,
bad
sounds
boy
like Skagway needs
book.
Another Guinness record, right?
They deserve. Do we have enough? What?
I think
Skagway?
We still have the biggest egg toss record.
Oh, we sure do.
Yeah, we need another record for
and
this.
And do you know who organized that?
Who?
This is called a radio segue. Buckwheat, our former tourism director, longtime tourism director in Skagway, he's the guy that kind of was like, hey, we got to have this egg toss, and we got to make it the biggest egg toss in the world. And so he organized it, and that's going to lead us into the next clip.
You are so good at this.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
And so began the 35th annual cross-country ski race known as the Buckwheat. Right. This year, deemed the Buckwheat COVID Classic. I caught up with Tom Parker just before the race and asked him if he thought he could win.
Well, it's not that I plan on it, it's just an eventuality. Much like the heat death of our universe, it's just going to happen.
That's a pretty good line. Did he win?
He did not. No. Ooh. No, I don't even think he placed.
Even better.
But he doesn't know. There's always next year. Right. Much like the heat death of the universe. Yeah. We don't have an exact pinpoint, do we?
No, we have no idea when that's going to happen. We're just sure it's going to.
So now we're just going to talk about entropy for the rest of the round table, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where were you when the buckwheat was happening?
I was up there. It was my first big public event following the lockdowns and self-isolation period. So I remember going up, and then things get a little fuzzy after that. I remember a bunch of us in the dark sliding down the access road like a big slushy water park, and I remember sweating my big fat body up the trail to get there, being really excited to see them light the COVID ball.
Yeah, it was a big COVID ball.
And apparently, like, as you know, with anything Skagway, people got really excited, and I think they lit it like a half an hour early. So I got up there, and it was all burned down and smoldering, and yeah. It was still, I think it was one of my favorite buckwheats. And I hope that we We keep having an event up at Lower Lake, even if when the regular Buckwheat comes back.
I've got to get in shape before they have any kind of events at Lower Lake. That was the Buckwheat was the first time that I'd ever done any kind of hike in Skagway. I Ooh. Moved here during those lockdowns you're talking about.
Got I remember, here yeah.
Right when COVID locked things down. And that was the first hike I did in Skagway. And hiking up to Lower Lake as a newbie is a scary thing, especially when it's super icy and you don't know what you're getting yourself into. But I hiked up that day and skied around the lake with the Owls, the Outdoor Women's League of Skagway.
What?
Yes. Oh. Nicole Kovacs had put that together, and she said, you know, anyone that wants to ski, you just meet us at the trailhead. I had never been to Lower Lake before, and she said there'd be a short walk before we got to our ski. I didn't realize that hiking to Lower Lake was going to be like sliding up an icy, cold, and freezing mountain. But I did make it up there. I was a little bit ragey and by the time I got up there. But I saw everyone preparing for something that I heard later, all of the stories about buckwheat and how important it is to everyone in this region. And yeah, I hope it continues there too, but maybe a helicopter could take me up there.
They had helicopters going up there. Now, this was the second story that I ever wrote as a reporter in my life. So it was like the first week of March, and it was the second story I ever wrote, and I had just gotten my vaccine. And so I got it that morning, or no, I got it the afternoon before. And so I'm hiking up and I'm like, all right, I feel great. Everything's great. And I'm carrying the equipment up and I've got like a hockey stick with a microphone because I didn't have a boom mic. And I get
How
up there.
How did you feel great? That
oh,
hike
I felt
is
great.
So hard.
Ah, I like that hike. But I get up there and then I started to not feel great. I'm like, ooh, something's wrong with my stomach. Oh.
Oh, no.
Ooh, everything. Wow, I feel like horking. And so I wrapped it up. Got as much audio as I could, got as many interviews as I could, and I was working with Henry at the time.
Did
Henry
you ditch
Leisher
the did you ditch the hockey stick with Henry?
Oh yeah,
I saw like, him with that
yeah.
later.
I was like, Henry, I gotta go. I hope you can get some more sound. So we teamed up to put that story together. Henry was a blast to work with, and we
and
miss him.
That's teamwork.
Yeah,
I'm just impressed that Cooper actually went up and did some skiing at the Buckwheat because.
Shush your mouth. That's the only time I've ever done it. I was so scared. I was such a mess.
We're moving on to one more clip, but this clip I think you're going to like.
You'll never escape.
Oh, this is my favorite clip.
Welcome to the laboratory.
That's Donna Grifford. She's been creeping out her neighbors for the last 20 years or so at her house on the corner of Fifth Avenue and Alaska Street in Skagway.
Somebody down the road is cranking it up a notch every year. Bring it on, Deb Potter. Bring it on.
Does Donna have a laboratory? Absolutely. Do I have thunder and lightning and projections? Sure do.
Well, there it goes. Did you get to go to their houses to see the Halloween decorations?
Oh, yes.
I had COVID.
Oh, Dustin.
I think I was just like sitting in a brain fog and eating everything in my house that I didn't want to eat because I couldn't taste or smell. So yeah, I didn't make it out on Halloween.
Halloween feels like the worst time to get COVID.
Yeah.
You couldn't taste candy on Halloween?
I couldn't taste anything.
And
but also I couldn't
even
smell myself, so that's cool.
But did your wife
I've completely derailed this. Like, we've gone from this great clip about Donna Grifford and Deb's like great houses to Dustin has COVID.
Well, I'm sorry that Dustin was
had
out.
Past tense.
Had
Dustin, I did not have COVID at that time, and I absolutely saw both Donna and Deb's stuff, and I.
Are you going to say which one was your favorite?
Oh, no. There's Cooper? No way I could possibly do that. I am too new in town to do something as silly as that.
Well, Cooper Lynn Hayes, Dustin Stone, thanks so much for joining the celebration of a year in journalism. Is that a celebration? Is that what we're calling it? Anyway, it's our news drive. So thanks for participating. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. And thank you for listening to this live broadcast of Lincoln L. Voice, shedding light on the process of creating radio newscasts for KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Clukwan. If you support our news program, please make an additional gift right now by calling 983-2853 or 766-2020 or going out to our website at khns.org. Help us reach our goal and showcase the importance of local independent radio news coverage for the Upper Lynn Canal.
And I couldn't help but throw my own name up on the board to help us satisfy that FBNA challenge grant, knowing that my Malamute Indy is listening to this special news drive at home. And so incorporating that challenge, we're now at $10,230, so over halfway to our goal for the day. And we thank everyone for your support, whether you've called in or given online at khns.org. We appreciate all the ways that you participate in contributing news stories, giving us feedback, and throwing down some cold, hard cash, because public radio is made of both dreams and dollars. And so we thank you for your support.